T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. Counting down the minutes, I'm headed off to the Sports Emmys for 2021 shortly. Maggie, I wish I could bring you as a sort of to walk the red carpet with me. But
to be your photographer for the night, it's okay. You can have Paul Papps do that.
Yeah, I'll be reunited with the old DP show crew. Should be a lot of fun. But I got to tell you, I am not so sad about missing the game 4 of the Warriors-Mavs. I mean, maybe I'll catch part of it. But at this point, we know the numbers. They're down 3-0, the Mavs. This is it.
It's basically a formality at this point,
yeah.
You know. And I don't know if it's going to be a sweep. I'm expecting that, you know, a combination of Dallas and Luka doing everything they possibly can to scratch out a win tonight, or maybe the Warriors just sort of letting their foot off the gas, as we've seen them do before, especially on the road, most notably that Grizzlies series where they lost a game by like 39 points. I don't know if it's going to be like that, but the combination of these two forces, I think, means Dallas probably wins tonight, and maybe this becomes just like a gentleman's sweep, you know, 4-1, something like that. But what I find so interesting about this series, even if the basketball hasn't been like, you know, super competitive between these two teams, I find it interesting about what does this mean for Steph Curry if he wins another title? You know, I was reading this like really amazing article in The Athletic today about just like the Warriors culture and sort of how they do things. You know, we talk a lot about Heat culture and rightfully so, but what the Warriors have built with the combination and the way this article makes it seem is it's actually Curry and Draymond and Steve Kerr. They really don't mention Klay Thompson like at all, which seems actually a little disrespectful, but it's Curry, it's Draymond, and it's Steve Kerr, and just how collaborative this team is. And, you know, for Curry, like, he's already thought of, I think, as the greatest shooter of all time, if not one of the greatest shooters of all time. But another ring pearl off for him in the post-KD era, I feel like that just takes him to another level.
Absolutely. I think the thing about Curry for me is the humble superstar. Like, and I know like people don't like his shimmy and stuff, but like you watch Steph Curry around his teammates, like it doesn't seem like he big times any of his teammates. He seems like a team first guy who is a superstar. I mean, am I buying into the smile too much? Do you think that's reality, that he's sort of one of those rare breeds, a superstar that doesn't let his stardom overwhelm the team?
I mean, it seems like that. I feel like we can't go this far having like these sort of superstars in our lives and not like, if that was an act, how do you keep it up? You know, like I know some people are one way, yeah, and present themselves one way in public than they do in private. And I'm sure he holds guys accountable, but you're right. There does seem to be like a sort of joy that he kind of plays with that seems to permeate through the rest of the team. Although then you have the Draymond portion of it, where I think Draymond is a lot more, I don't know this, but just how they come across, like super direct, super like willing to get in guys' faces. And I think Draymond and Kerr go back and forth a little bit, and I think that creates like a little bit of that good sort of the good tension.
Yes. Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like the good competitive spirit tension.
Yeah, you need both or all three. I think that's a great point. Like Draymond offers a lot of things that Steph Curry does not as a leader. I get that Klay Thompson thing, just sort of being on the outside, not playing that exact role. Don't you see that with Klay's personality? I think that's good too. I think you need those guys as well.
Very interesting. Let's welcome in our next guest. We're huge fans of his. He's got a million jobs. He's great at all of them. Zach Harper, you can hear him on SiriusXM NBA Radio. You can listen to him. He's part of the Meadowlark family. You can read him on The Athletic. He does it all, and he's here to talk hoops with us. Zach, thanks so much for making time for us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm bad at a couple of the jobs, but I won't tell you which one.
It's up to your boss's discretion, I guess, so which
exactly.
one Zach's mailing in. Okay, so weigh in on this Steph Curry thing. We were just talking about an article that was in The Athletic about sort of how the Warriors have built this culture. But what does another ring do for Curry in like a post-KD world?
It's interesting. I guess it will depend. A lot of people want to judge him based on whether or not he has a finals MVP. So I guess we can throw that into the conversation. Personally, I don't think it matters. I think anyone who's watched the Warriors over the last, let's just say like 10 years by now, 9 or 10 years, know that Steph Curry is the reason that that offense is as great as it is. Like, everybody is so worried. No one's ever been the threat that he is at half court, like at the actual half court line. Defenses get nervous as he either crosses half court without the ball or with the ball. That's how much gravity he has. And then his ability and willingness to give the ball up quickly in a possession and then run around until everyone else is confused and he can get the ball back and drop that all-time jump shot on everybody. Like, it causes so much chaos. And there's going to be a point where let's say they add a title this year and maybe he adds another one to his career after that, if they've got a couple of years in this run, which it looks like they might, if we get to that point, I mean, you're starting to creep into, this is going to make a lot of people annoyed because they don't want to give him the credit, but like, you're starting to creep into a top 10 conversation at that point.
Zach, you know, we talk about Curry's greatness. I'm like a system guy a little bit, especially in football, but also in basketball. Like, was he at the right place at the right time to sort of join forces with Kerr in the front office there? Was it Steph Curry's career definitely going to go down this path? Is it possible he could end up with a team that didn't use him like this?
It's very possible, but I also think that there's a certain point where someone's talents are just undeniable, right? Like, he was incredible under Mark Jackson. It's not like all of a sudden he was a great player when Steve Kerr came around. There were a lot of people, I think it was the 2012-2013 season, where David Lee ended up being the all-star for the Golden State Warriors, and a lot of people at the time thought, wait, why isn't this going to Steph Curry? Like, he's clearly the best player on this team. This is kind of a bad, lazy decision to give it to the guy who just gets a bunch of double-doubles, because that's back when, a long time ago, for listeners, we valued double-doubles like you would not. Especially 2010 games, like, we couldn't get enough of it. It was like David Lee and Jermaine O'Neal and Kevin Love, and oh my God, we were feasting at this idea of a 2010 game. But, you know, Steph Curry, I think he was always going to find this path to greatness. I think it probably accelerated a little bit. They got a little lucky in the sense that David Lee got hurt. Draymond Green was kind of forced into the lineup, and then they really took off. And I get it. Like, yes, the system is part of what makes Steph Curry so great, but he kind of is the system at the same time when you really break it down.
Zach Harper's our guest. Okay, two things. The patron saint of the double-double is definitely Zach Randolph, I would say, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, do you remember when, like, there was a legit conversation about, like, oh my goodness, the Warriors picked Steph Curry over Monte Ellis? Like, that was something that happened. I was alive. I remember it.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous at the time, but none of us knew any better. Okay, well, maybe people like Zach did. Okay, Zach, turning over to the Dallas Mavericks, right? Luka, undeniable star. We're just talking about, you know, his greatness sort of breaking through just like we think Curry's would have. We were having this discussion on the show yesterday. Who's, like, Luka's ideal running mate? You know, like, you know, who do the Dallas Mavericks need to be looking at this offseason to try to complement Luka in a better way?
It's a really good question. Like, I kind of try to figure out, all right, do they need, like, an all-star level center to pull everything together? Would that help? Because there have been some conversations about, all right, would they target Rudy Gobert if he's available in a trade, right? After they just exposed Rudy Gobert in a playoff series. But Rudy does a lot of things defensively that they could use, a lot of things rebounding-wise that they could use. So you could, like, make that argument that.
I think we might have lost Zach here for a second.
Oh, no, did we lose Zach? He was making such a great point.
Yeah, I'm dying to know who he's going to pair with Luka. We got to get him back.
I'm like, wait a minute, can't be Gobert.
Zach is back. Sorry, you got cut off there for a second, Zach.
I don't know what happened there. I think, like, kind of the ideal pairing might be what we see when they're healthy with a Kawhi Leonard and a Paul George type, right? I think he needs another dynamic wing, a 3-and-D guy who can initiate offense, who can be a guy who gets you an easy 20 a game. I think that's really where the currency of the NBA is now in terms of being able to switch everything. It would take a lot of pressure off him to be so on the ball. And I think they need to diversify that offense a little bit to where it's not just 35% to 40% usage every game for Luka Doncic.
Well, that's not so easy, though, to get a Kawhi Leonard or Paul George.
Oh, really difficult, yeah. It's really difficult.
What moves, realistically, you see the Mavs making in the near short term to try and get Luka the next step?
I mean, I think it's probably going after a really good defensive center and a guy like a Rudy Gobert, right? And I don't know that that's someone I would necessarily want. I think there are a lot of drawbacks to bringing in Rudy Gobert, but that might be the easiest one because they're not going to be a lot of available guys that they can just go get. You know, Dallas has had a lot of issues in the past of bringing in free agents. Luka, you hope, fixes some of that. Their run to the conference finals, you hope, fixes some of that. But it's probably going out and trying to replace Dwight Powell as the starting center.
Zach Harper is our guest. You can listen to him on SiriusXM NBA Radio. He's part of Meadowlark Media. We got to get his thoughts on our Tom Cruise conversation. We'll do that in just a minute. Obviously, he's a writer for The Athletic as well. Flipping over to the other series, Zach, you know, it's obviously been blowout after blowout. It's kind of hard to get a grasp on sort of what's going on in this series, mostly because of the injuries, or at least that's how I see it. What's your big takeaway so far from Miami and Boston tied 2-2?
It feels like both teams have gone to the DMV without an appointment. Like that's what, and it's just like they're just showing up and seeing what happens. It might be good. They might get their tags and their plates right away. They might be there for 3 hours and just have frustration. Like, I don't really understand what's going on in this series. Like, is Jimmy Butler healthy? Is the knee an issue? You know, who's going to be available for Boston? It's been very chaotic. It felt like one quarter decides this series every game. And so I guess it's just who can avoid the apocalyptic quarter, that's who's going to end up winning that game and ultimately enough games in the series.
Do you think whoever comes out of this series is going to be so run down from the series that they won't have a shot, or is it going to be, are they going to be more game ready? You know, the Celtics played the Nets in the first round and weren't ready at all in the second round because of it. So maybe they'll be tougher. If you're an Eastern Conference fan, how can you give us a little confidence here?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking at that, like, yes, there's the idea if you made it through the war of attrition that is the Eastern Conference and everyone's going to be battle-tested and you're tougher than everybody, you play physical basketball and you get through that, okay, great. Now go chase Steph Curry around for 7 games. Go leave Klay Thompson at your own peril for, you know, to go cover other guys. Like, I think it's going to be such a different game. It's going to be such a shock to the system to play the Warriors. And after that, especially if it's the Celtics, if the Celtics get through it, what they went through physically with Milwaukee and then again with Miami, to get through that and then to have to play the Warriors, I just don't know that I feel great about either team. I think they're going to be really worn down while the Warriors are going to have fresh legs.
Zach Harper is our guest. Okay, not to be like that star chaser kind of person, but it seems like we're kind of like, you know, arguing about this in real time about the standing of certain superstars, like as the series are going on. So I know the series is far from over, but for Jason Tatum, for Jimmy Butler, Zach, like what has this series done for either of those guys?
I think there's still people that really doubt Jimmy Butler, right, as like a star in this league. And I don't understand why. Like, he's been phenomenal. He is a culture changer. And he's someone who, you know, he was right about what was going on in Chicago. He was right about what was going on in Minnesota. He was right about what was going on in Philadelphia. And, yes, the Heat are more in tune to his kind of personality, but he's been right about a lot. Maybe you don't like the way he goes about showing that he's right, but he's one of the best players in the league. And so I think a trip to the finals would really validate that for him. I don't think he's searching for that necessarily, but I think it would help in the conversation about him. Tatum has just grown up. I mean, Tatum, if you remember back in November, was getting criticized publicly by his own teammates for being a ball hawk. And just not through a firing of a coach, not through a huge acquisition at the trade deadline. There was nothing. It was just he got called out and he responded and he matured in real time. I don't remember seeing something like that. Like if he's able to lead this Celtics team through to the finals for the first time since, what is it, 2010? Like, that's a guy that you have to throw into, like, the top five player conversation in the league. Like, he's validating that much on both ends of the floor.
It's been fascinating. All right, Zach, before we get you out of here, you also pull double duty, not just as a basketball writer and radio host and podcaster, but you also have a movie podcast also. And so, you know, ESPN did this story today about they had like Olympic sprinters weigh in on Tom Cruise and his like running style in movies. And we were talking about other actors who are phenomenal on-screen runners. I mean, ooh, Cruise is far and away the best. We also put Will Smith in Men in Black, Laura Dern in Jurassic Park, and of course, Sylvester Stallone in Rocky. Not to put you on the spot, but is there anyone who comes to mind who's a phenomenal on-screen runner?
That's a great question. You know who's a really good runner, but like it's a specific running. It's running with a limp. Is Keanu Reeves. He's done a lot of movies where he has to run with a limp, and he sells it like you would not believe. Like he does it in Point Break. He does it in the John Wick franchise. He does it in a lot of movies where he is forced to, he does it in The Replacements, where obviously he's a football player, but he does it where he is like clearly hurt and having to get through it, but he guts through it with such a great run. Like he's someone where I don't think anyone sprints better than Tom Cruise. I don't think anybody runs injured better than Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, they should make an Oscar category. I think he might have also been hurt in Speed, and I think you're right. Yep. I think it's at one point he's running through an injury. Great call, Zach. Can't tell you how much we appreciate your contributions to this show, both basketball and cinema. Thanks so much for the time, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Back on Maggie and Perloff. Perloff has gone to the Sports Emmys, where his last show has been nominated for Best Studio Show. So sending all the positive vibes to everyone at the Dan Patrick Show, and hopefully they come back as winners. I got to tell you, I was fascinated by this report that came from the NBA Combine in Chicago, which is that Lakers general manager Rob Pelinka and Brooklyn Nets general manager Sean Marks apparently met and huddled for quite a bit in Chicago. Now, what was on the agenda? No one can be sure. Perhaps it was Rob Pelinka trying to get a little, intel on Kenny Atkinson, who is the former, the former coach of the Brooklyn Nets, who's now one of the three finalists for the Lakers job. But then my sort of spidey senses go up a little bit, because could you really make it to be a finalist for the LA Laker job and the general manager who's in charge of hiring you has not gone to your last employer where you were the head coach and talked to him already? I find that a little hard to believe. So what else could the two of these guys been talking about? And I don't know if there would be a world where these two teams could make a trade or want to make a trade, but I find it fascinating that those two guys were huddled for a long time at the Combine in Chicago. So that leads us into a segment we're calling Ascending or Descending. And Mike Samter is going to throw out a couple teams or people, and we're not sure if they're on the rise or about to hit the skids. So, Mike, I think we got to start here with the Los Angeles Lakers, right?
I think so, too. And unless Sean Marks and Pelinka were talking about a Ben Simmons-Russell Westbrook trade, there's a lot of question marks about the Lakers' future. Their coaching search, a lot of people calling out their coaching search. So of all the ascending and descending, we're actually going to kind of go through some of like the historical dynasties and all-time great franchises in sports and ask this question. So we'll start with the Lakers. Do you think the Lakers are ascending or descending?
So this is tough. I have to believe it's descending at this moment in time right now. And I'm going to say and put that caveat on it because the Lakers have a lot of roster building to go here. I mean, the only guys who are under contract next year is Westbrook, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Talen Horton-Tucker, and Kendrick Nunn. Besides, like, and then you got to go to the real bottom of the roster. I mean, they need to build a team. Not just that, they need to hire a coach, obviously. And I think that this Westbrook contract is going to be next to impossible to get off their hands at the beginning of the season. Okay, maybe closer and closer to the trade deadline, it becomes maybe a more valuable commodity because it'd be an expiring contract that's massive. But from what I'm reading and what I'm seeing, teams who have engaged with the Lakers to this point on Westbrook want a first round draft pick attached to him if they're going to take on that $47 million contract. So with this current iteration, with where the Lakers are right now, I have to say that they are descending. What else you got?
All right, well, we move over from the hardwood onto the field. And we've talked a lot about Mac Jones. We've talked a lot about Tom Brady. But the New England Patriots, Bill Belichick, it seems like they have a lot of young talent that they're building around, and obviously the young quarterback. But are the Patriots on the way up, or are they way on the way down?
Okay, this one is actually, it's a trick, right? The trick is that the Patriots themselves are, I think, on the way up. What is also difficult, though, is the AFC is so competitive and the rest of their division is getting so competitive that I don't think they're going to, like, it's possible that they're not a playoff team next season. Now, betting against Belichick, no matter how much it seems like, you know, things could be stacked against him, is really a fool's errand. But I think it's not the Patriots so much, it's everyone else around them. You know, the Bills obviously aren't walkovers like they were for 20 years. The Jets, we think, are going to be at least better. And the Miami Dolphins made one of the biggest swings this offseason in trading for Tyreek Hill, and that team has gotten better. So I still think the Patriots are on the way up. I mean, we talked earlier in the show about Mac Jones being, you know, in the best shape of his life, and we clowned around about it and, you know, made fun of those stories. But if Mac Jones does take a significant step up, they do have the weapons offensively, and they obviously have a good defense, even if they lost J.C. Jackson. So I still think the Patriots on the rise. I just think the rest of the conference has gotten much better. All right, what's next?
All right, so we go from the AFC to the NFC. Aaron Rodgers is going to be teaming up in the match with Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. So are the Packers, after getting rid of Davante Adams and everything else that's going on there, are they on the way up after being the number one seed and falling short again, or are they on the way down with Rodgers getting towards the end of his career?
Oh, man, this one is really hard because the defense is really good, right? I mean, we think that defense is going to be really good, and they spent two first-round picks making sure the defense was going to be even better. If we expect those rookies to contribute right away, Packers' defense is good. And I have to believe that Aaron Rodgers is going to make chicken salad here. I mean, these receivers are not household names at all. We know that in the past, Rodgers does not like throwing to rookies, but he's going to have to, at least with the second round pick that they got. And I just have a hard time believing that anyone else in the division, A, is going to beat the Packers. No offense, Minnesota Vikings, but I don't see how that's going to happen. And I think Rodgers just ends up having another season where they're right in it. I just don't know if they've done enough to put themselves, like, over the hump, you know, where they do get back to the Super Bowl. But I have to believe, even after losing Adams, it kind of still feels like the Packers are on the ascent. Am I crazy there?
I don't think you're crazy. I just wonder, on the offensive side, like, as you were just talking about, Aaron Rodgers is amazing, but how long can he produce magic without all of these, without pieces around him? At a certain point, the magic has to run out, and I wonder about his commitment. I wonder about all these different things. He has to play with a chip on his shoulder, so, like, where's the chip now? He had this, like, back-and-forth battle between the front office, and he won, and now he's kind of like, all right, I won. I'm here for another 4 years or whatever it's going to be. Unless Aaron Rodgers is, like, again, spectacular, all-time great quality player at 38, whatever he is, I see that the division is still bad, so maybe they're just going to feast. But
yeah,
I'm seeing it as, like, an ascending, like, maybe staying the same. But they were the one seed the past 2 years. They're not going to be the one seed again, that's for sure.
I don't know. I mean, who in the NFC is coming for them?
The, like, Rams, okay, the Bucks, the Cowboys. And I only say the Cowboys because the East is bad.
Yeah, but, I mean, most people think the Philadelphia Eagles are going to win that division. You know, there's a lot of people who don't even think the Cowboys are the best team in that division, which I would still say the Cowboys are the best in the division. It's easier to say that with Perloff gone, and we can talk about Dak Prescott being better than Jalen Hurts, I think, in our in the truth tree here, the trust nest. But, the NFC to me feels like the junior varsity, and that doesn't mean that they're not going to potentially be the Super Bowl champs coming out of the NFC. But, you know, you stumbled on something there. Not stumbled. You hit on something really good, which is like the Rodgers motivation. Like, how much bleep you does he have left? He's already now had back-to-back MVPs where he clearly showed the organization that they chose unwisely by drafting Jordan Love in the first round. Like, are the Super Bowls the thing that motivates him at this point? He's got all the money in the world, so that's out the window. I mean, how much longer, like, if it's just the Super Bowls, then amazing, but then he can't be happy with the receiver core around him if that's his pure motivation. I don't know what Aaron Rodgers' motivation is, to be honest. I have no clue.
And listen, he even admitted when he's talking about the match that he doesn't practice golf. But like the way he said it and the fact that he's not at OTAs with his new receivers, like, I wonder if he practices football at this point anyway either.
Well, something tells me he practices football. I would think so. Okay, who else is our ascending or descending?
Well, we've been talking about them a lot the past week, the Alabama Crimson Tide, because as we know, they went from being the best recruiting team to being the second best recruiting team. And Nick Saban is 70 years old, and the NILs, I guess there's not that money there. I mean, I guess he's supposed to make us think that, you know, all these other teams are lapping them in NILs and paying for everybody when they're clearly not doing this. Of course, Nick. But is Alabama ascending or descending with a 70-year-old coach and NILs taking over the sport?
Okay, so I'm going to answer this in the short term. In the short term, by like next season, I mean, I still think Alabama's on the ascent. They still have an incredible team. You're coming back with the Heisman Trophy winner and Bryce Young. Like, you've got plenty of talent to still be on the way up. But if I'm forecasting a longer future for the Alabama Crimson Tide, I'm going descending, because I think Nick Saban has had it up to here with all of these new changes. And those changes might get tweaked a little bit, but they're not going anywhere. You know, guys being able to profit off the name, image, and likeness, these collectives, like, maybe some changes will happen. But if Saban is overall, like, you know, just beside himself about where the future of the sport is going, then I think it's going to push him out the door. You know, we talked to Monty Burke, who wrote a biography about Saban that's fantastic. He thought this could put a chip on Saban's shoulder and give him that sort of extra motivation as he's in, like, the latter portion of his coaching career. I see the opposite. I see a frustrated Nick Saban who has nothing left to prove, who is the best coach in the history of college football, and I see him pushing him out of the sport. So in the short term, Alabama's fine. In the long term, they're going to go through some kind of a change here, I think, sooner than we believed. And every time you go through a coaching change of that magnitude, I think you're going to see a little bit of a descent there.
All right, so we have one more we'll do real quick. Mr. Okay. Tom Brady, the GOAT, 44 years old, came back after retiring, unretiring. He has a new coach. He lost his backup running back in Ronald Jones, and obviously Chris Godwin was hurt. Mike Evans is always hurt. They lost some offensive line guys. With the Bucs being what they are, is Tom Brady still ascending, or is this kind of like going to be the end in an ugly way?
Well, I think it's like him aging. He never descends, you know? He's aging like better than any person could hope to age in their entire lives. We bow down at the altar of Tom Brady aging in reverse. But I would say, see, here's the thing. I got on Brady about the broadcasting and some of the other stuff because I thought, man, it feels like football is like the furthest thing from this guy's mind. But to be fair to Brady, he is always so 100% locked in and dialed in. It'd be an unfair criticism. And so I would have to say Brady is still ascending. See, I think what Brady wants to do now is win the Super Bowl, ride off into the sunset. You know, for a while, I thought the Miami Dolphins were going to be on the table because of all of the, you know, rumors about him wanting to team up maybe with Sean Payton or him taking front office stuff. I think this is his last year playing football. I do think he wants to go out as a winner and then go to the broadcast booth for an ungodly amount of money and see if he's any good at that. I think Brady's going to try a bunch of stuff. I think he would at some point be the president of a team. I said, again, obviously he's going to do the broadcasting. He's got the TB12. So I have to say, football-wise, this is going to be the final ascent for Brady, and he's hoping to peak with a Super Bowl and then on to greener, better pastures. I don't know. Are there any greener pastures? There's more money. They're pastures lined with money, with dollar bills. That's why they're green.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, I guess whatever the carpet color is of the floor of the broadcast booth in which he's going to be calling games from, I guess that would be the pasture color.
No, I think it's just going to be lined with money. That's what I think. I think he's going to be
and money's green, so that works.
This thing where he's doing the backstroke, you know, through like
Scrooge McDuck. What is this?
All of his money. That's what we got. All right, a little ascending or descending, fun stuff here. Coming up next, will the most sought-after recruit in the country also become a savior for one underachieving program? We will get to that in just a moment, though. Bottom of the hour, time for a CBS Sports Update. Here's Rich Ackerman. Back on Maggie and Perloff. My co-host has left for the day. He is at the Sports Emmys, where his last show has been nominated for Best Studio Show, so he had to do a quick outfit change into the suit and tie, off to the big gala in New York City. I'm still holding it down in the home studio. I'll be back in the New York City studios on Thursday and looking forward to getting all the good gossip from Perloff tomorrow on all the industry gossip that we can have some fun with, see who he rubs elbows with at the Sports Emmys. So that's all cool. That's all a lot of fun. We also had some other people having some fun out on the golf course. Obviously, this match, it's Tom Brady against Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. You know, they're raising all this money for charity. They were doing some press today where they were doing like a chipping contest. And instead of chipping into a hole, like a regular golf hole, it was a net. But the nets had the wide receivers for each of the quarterbacks, like a cardboard cutout of the wide receivers holding a net, and Tom Brady used that as a moment to have a little fun.
These young guys are coming out firing, so y'all better bring y'all's A game.
I got my boy Mike there ready to catch. I don't even know who caught Aaron. Devontae left him, and Tyreek left you, Patrick. Josh, don't worry, someone's going to leave you too.
Tom, how dare you? Stephon Diggs signed a contract extension. Nobody is going to be leaving Josh Allen, that's for sure. And hilarious that, yeah, unfortunately for Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill left, although he's got some pretty good options there with Kelsey and others. And, yeah, for Rodgers, I don't know, Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb, Christian Watson, step on up. All right, we're going to play a little game here called Do You Believe It? It's one of our favorites here at the Maggie and Perloff Show because people say a lot of things, and it doesn't mean we're necessarily buying it. So, Samter, you're going to toss me over some things that people have said over the last 24 hours, and I'll tell you whether or not to believe it. Dive in.
So, this first person or people are better known as anonymous team owner. The USA Today did a expose and a conversation about Washington and their team owner, Dan Snyder. One anonymous team owner said there's growing frustration about the Washington situation and not over one issue, but how much smoke there is. I think everybody is getting tired of it. A second anonymous team owner said, we are counting votes. If the financial improprieties happened, I think that's the nail in the coffin. So it sounds like owners are saying that they are counting the votes, kind of taking a straw poll, and maybe Dan Snyder could be on his way out. Do you believe it?
I never would have believed it until the story came out that Dan Snyder may have been keeping two sets of books. That's when I started to believe it. And forgive me for being cynical, but there have been multiple investigations into the Washington football team. It is, you know, the misconduct, how they treated employees, especially women, you know, and that really netted a whole lot of nothing, you know, nothing to a billionaire like Dan Snyder. A $10 million fine, a slap on the wrist telling him he has to stay away from the organization, which I'm not even sure that's actually happening. But as soon, none of that would have gotten his team taken away. But as soon as that story came out where a former employee was allegedly, like, you know, ready to testify or ready to give, you know, sworn testimony that there were two sets of books and that Daniel Snyder was keeping money from the rest of the NFL owners, that is when I started to believe it. Because, you know, what do we have here, right? You have owners who don't want to set a precedent that a team can get taken away because of bad behavior. Because if you look into every, I'm not saying every team, but if you look into a lot of them, you're probably going to find some things that you don't like. However, an owner technically stealing from the other owners, that is a roadmap that will ultimately lead to the franchise being taken away. So that's when I believed that perhaps he will lose his team. Although, can I ask this other story that came out about the Washington football team, that they bought $100 million piece of land in Virginia that they may want to build a new stadium on? I mean, you talk about an unpopular owner, one of the most unpopular in sports, in a team that is crap or has been for quite a long time. You are going to tell me that the taxpayers in Virginia or Maryland or DC are going to get behind a new stadium? I mean, you would be the most unpopular politician to align yourself with Daniel Snyder. I mean, even people who don't know, Democrat, Republican, we can all agree that Daniel Snyder can be a nightmare. So I don't know how that would ever get pushed. If they want public funding, this seems like a really bad time to ask the public for any kind of money to support this franchise. And that makes me think that even more so that Snyder could be on the way out. Okay, what else do we have?
Well, so maybe the potential future quarterback of the Washington Commanders. He's a little bit young, so maybe we're kind of projecting a little bit too much, but Arch Manning, the famed young high school quarterback Arch Manning, the most sought-after high school recruit that I can remember maybe ever, has narrowed it down, or at least made three official plans for visits, just three programs. We all know that he spoke about Athens being probably the best college town, so Georgia is clearly on that list. He also set a visit with Alabama, and the third team may be a bit of a surprise, but Sark and Texas, the Longhorns. Yeah. So do you believe that Arch Manning is actually considering going to Texas over Alabama or Georgia?
Man, I mean, and he would ultimately become like a savior, too, for a program, you know, that has not been living up to expectations for quite some time. I do believe it. I believe that he is seriously considering it. And I think there's a couple reasons why. Number one, I do think that Texas moving to the SEC in, what, 2023, 2024, I think that is a big move in the right direction in getting Arch Manning because, I mean, just look at the family, right? They've all played in the SEC. I think there is a preference to try to play in the best football conference. And so that bodes well, I think, for Texas. Apparently, he's got a close relationship with Sarkisian, so that's probably got to help them as well, although I'm sure he has close relationships with a lot of these head coaches. When you're a Manning, I mean, you're obviously going to know most of the football world probably by the time you're like 10. And so I think that these three are all legit schools. I don't think he would be taking an official visit as like a favor to somebody. You know, I think that if he's going on these visits, he's real serious. And one of the things he had said in an interview I read was he liked Austin because it's a little bit more like New Orleans in the fact that it's like a bigger city. Whereas, you know, Athens, Georgia, or Tuscaloosa are just a little bit smaller. And he liked the fact of kind of being in a city. So I'm buying it. I believe it.
And last one. This guy, Bradley Beal, maybe the top potential free agent on the market. He has a player option for next year worth $36 million. Well, he spoke to the Washington Post, and he said, this injury also gave me a mental break, a time to evaluate life, and I haven't changed my mindset. I enjoy being in D.C. I enjoy being on this team. So do you believe that Bradley Beal enjoys being with the Wizards and that he's going to sign and stay with the Wizards?
Well, I believe Bradley Beal likes D.C. because D.C. is a great city. I went to college there, so a little bit biased, but D.C. is a great city, and I think it's an awesome city, you know, for culture and, you know, if you're into history and food and all of that, it's got a lot there for you, so it's interesting city. I think Bradley Beal is doing the right thing here, right? I think that he is trying so hard and doing such a good job of not being that guy, right? That guy who's trying to force his way off of a team and try to get himself where he wants to go. He just watched, and for better or for worse, but he just watched Russell Westbrook literally do this with the Washington Wizards, where Westbrook went to the owner and asked to be traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. And ended up probably Lakers want a mulligan on that one, but he just saw that. Obviously, we all watch James Harden and Anthony Davis and other guys. I think Beal is trying very hard not to be lumped in with those guys. I think it's important to him. So for this, I believe it, but I got to say, I do think he's going to be on a new team next year. I'm not trying to speak out of both sides of my mouth. I think he's doing the right thing, but ultimately I think he is going to be on a different team next year. What do you think about that, Samter?
It makes sense. I mean, I think his heart's in the right place, but I think the reality will set in eventually for him.
Yeah. All right. That was a robust, do you believe it? One of the favorite games that we play here on the Maggie and Perloff show. Okay, what do we think? Is Perloff coming home with the hardware tonight?
I
say yes.
I'm going for it. Absolutely.
Yes.
I think that this is the farewell that the Sports Emmys give a little nod to Perloff in his last year with Dan Patrick's show, and I think they come through with the Sports Emmy. We'll have to find out tomorrow. Thanks, Mike Samter, Stu Kovacs, Marlo Donahue, everyone on the radio and TV side. Appreciate you so much. We'll see you tomorrow. We out.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.